Welcome to the Resound Worship Songwriting Podcast, episode 142. I'm Joel Payne.
I'm Chris Juby.
I'm Andrew Finden.
I'm Derek Bemler.
And I'm Elise Massa.
Woohoo! And we are... No, this is...
The Avengers.
A podcast. We are The Avengers.
When our powers combine, we are...
Bum, 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 bum. It just cost you about $5,000.
Oh, no. Does that mean we're going to get... Oh, we'll get blocked or invaded or stuff?
No, we'll call it a parody. It'll be fine.
Okay, that's fine. This is a podcast about worship songwriting and etc. We're going to do some stuff. Well, this is great. Chris, Andrew, Elise, we've all been on the podcast a lot together over a number of years. Mm. A lot. I've been on it a lot. And I've seen you guys quite a lot. But, Derek, this is your first time.
Woo!
Yeah. Yay!
So I thought, why don't we... the rest of us interview Derek. Who's got a question for Derek?
Elise.
How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, we're in the middle of a 2-year sing through of the Book of Psalms at Restoration Anglican in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So that's taken up a lot of my attention and work effort. Very rewarding so far. We're only 10% done.
Wow.
Are you writing the songs or are you sourcing the songs? How's that working?
We're chanting some. We're singing some Watts settings. We're doing some antiphonally spoken responses. It's really great. It's fun so far.
When you say you're chanting them, are you writing the chants or are you using Anglican chant or...
I'm using 12-point Anglican Psalter. This one's nice. From David Madeira, who I think is associated with the Theopolis Institute.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
I know
settings.
Everything he just said. But
And is that what you do full time, chanting and singing Watts?
No, it's not. In fact, we don't chant normally on Sunday mornings, but I would like to at some point. And... this has been, I love the Book of Psalms in general, and I felt convicted to get my church deeper invested in the Psalter.
Everyone's right. Nodding right
there
now.
There we go. Great interview. That was really good. Well, I like the way you managed to squeeze in biographical details as well, Derek, spotting that they'd be more useful than some of the other things we might ask. You are also, so this is a very, this is a, what should we put it? We have some of the biggest voices in the 12-song challenge in the room together today. This is one of the things that, especially Andrew and Derek are famous for. We've always wanted to get them together for one big sing-off. Mm. We did have you in the same place in Eagle Rock, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Last September.
Yeah. I think fortunately we're both more collaborators than rivals.
I think we end up spending most of the time talking about vocal technique. So, what's your favorite vocal warm up?
Oh, my favorite vocal warm up. It's the this is a W. Stephen Smith. He was my teacher at Northwestern. And down into vocal fry.
Ooh, the siren up really
even
high
out
down
the vocal registers. It's great for building mixed voice, middle voice kind of stuff. Love it. Keeps me fresh.
Nice.
This is my favorite podcast.
What's yours?
Ever.
To be honest, it's not actually it's just a nice tongue stretch. I think they're the best. Yeah, they just open everything up. They just feel so good.
Joel's really thankful this is not a video podcast.
No.
you should have been on a couple of weeks ago when Huck came and said, "Dad, touch my tongue," whatever it was. Little did I know. That's what, right. Should we carry on? Great to have everybody here with us. Lovely to have Derek for the first time. And we've had it's been an exciting few days for us because, Chris, tell the listeners what we've just done.
What have we just done? We've just released the first EP of our ongoing Resound Worship Community Songs project.
Yay!
Yes. Woo-hoo! Yeah, so a 3-song EP of songs that we recorded live at the Wydale writing retreat in the summer.
Yeah. I remember the five of us were in Tennessee last year, and as early on in that retreat, I stood up and I talked about this threefold thing of glorifying God, growing disciples and building community. And as I was standing there speaking, the penny dropped in my head. Oh, we should be focusing on community as our next project. That was the place. While you lot were looking at me intently and listening to me, I sort of remember. Do you do this sometimes if you're doing public speaking? You're speaking, but you're having a little conversation in your head behind the scenes. And most of the time that's fine. And every now and again, you start paying more attention to that. And then the words dry up in front. You don't know where. Well, that happens to me. So that's what I start thinking about.
We didn't notice that, Joel.
No, thank you. That's because of my beautiful British accent that was just wowing everybody.
that's probably true.
So we really set ourselves this task of deeply exploring this. And we have talked several times now on the podcast, I think, about the theme of community and the kind of things we're trying to do. But one of the things was just to say, look, let's try and put down our model of what we think singing in church looks like, and let's try and rebuild it based on what we want to try and achieve with it. And that was something where we took a few of us away. So Andrew, Elise, Chris, we were all there just to try and explore this idea, just hammer away at it for a few days, try some things. And Chris, just remind us again, the very particular and unique approach we had.
Yeah, so we decided... it's often the case when we're writing for some particular theme or one of our projects that we kind of just, certainly I go into, maybe you have more ideas, Joel, because you set the theme. But I always come to these things just with absolutely no idea how I'm going to write a song about creation care. Or in this instance, after you'd started sort of talking about the vision for what you were hoping we might achieve kind of conceptually with community songs, I just thought, I have no idea how I'm going to write songs about that. I don't know what this project is going to sound like whatsoever. And so one of the things we decided this time was that we were not going to use any existing songs in our times of worship together. We were going to write, we kind of gathered together, had some input every morning, and then had time writing songs that were specifically and only to lead worship together at the end of the morning. And we specifically challenged ourselves and briefed ourselves not to have an album or a project or, you know, some kind of outcome beyond the retreat in view at all, because it kind of feels like as soon as you're kind of writing with an ulterior motive, whether it's because I want to get on a record or whether it's because I'm hoping that the song will have, you know, like some other purpose, as soon as you're doing that, it's kind of taken you out of the moment, and you're not kind of, you're not writing for the community, or the risk is that your priority is not on writing what that community right there needs to sing. And so we kind of briefed ourselves, basically these are temporary songs, they're disposable songs. We're going to write songs that are so specific to this moment that maybe they wouldn't be of any use at all outside of this moment. They're going to draw in together. Everybody was coming from their different circumstances of life, you know, difficult things, brilliant things. And we kind of had a time where we shared what's going on in our lives at the beginning. And so a lot of the songs kind of really specifically named things that people had shared, or really specific things from the talks and the times of input. So deliberately writing these songs to lead worship together that were as specifically for that particular retreat, that particular group of people, that particular time as possible. And you know, there was a great diversity of stuff that came out, and three of the songs that are on this EP, they all came from that. But I think we probably wrote two dozen songs during that time, and at least half of them couldn't possibly have a life outside of that specific moment, which was a really incredible discipline, actually, to kind of exercise. It really convinced me that there's something magic that happens when you are writing for community, and the songs are for people. The people are more important than the songs, in fact.
Andrew, I'd love it if you just describe a little bit of your experience of those few days, but also I think you were probably the first ping on the WhatsApp group to say, oh, I've used that song I've used one of the songs here, or I've used one of the songs there, or something. For that, how you kind of just a little bit about the kind of the motivation and why take what seemed like disposable songs and think, no, this is going to be useful in my church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was the first writing camp I'd been on. So it was a new experience for me as well. And I loved being there and sort of filling up on all this stuff, the teaching and the community. And then, yeah, just being able to really write, as Chris said, being able to write into the specifics, spending 45 minutes just sort of processing what people have been sharing and saying, well, how can I write something that speaks to those people who have faces and names who are right in front of me? What words can I help them or can I give them right now to be able to worship God? That was really great. And yeah, so even though we weren't necessarily writing for beyond that period, some of the songs obviously that came out were usable in terms of broader appeal. And so as I was, in the weeks following, leading in sort of mainly in smaller things, like on a leader's retreat or in a small group setting, and I just thought, hey, I'm just going to pull this out and see what happens. And people really, really resonated with the spirit of the songs and what they're able to do. There's something really unique about them, I think, because of the way they were written.
Hmm. Well, let's jump forward. So we're at Wydale, we're recording these things together. We decided to take everyone out of the chapel and cram them into the central hall area just for it to be kind of, I don't know, different somehow. We had people draped around sofas and standing and stuff. I like the idea that we crammed ourselves in. At least you were part of that moment, but both in terms of leading some songs, but also being part of the group. Can you describe a little bit of the experience of that?
Well, I think depending on your context for how you lead worship at a church, it could have been quite jarring that, like, everyone's looking at you can see them because all the lights are on. You're right up against people, like this whole fourth wall that I think sometimes we can fall into as worship leaders. It's just not there. And so that was quite lovely. I mean, I definitely lend to the lights up, bring the people as close as possible, chat with people informally while leading them in the worship of an almighty God. So it really felt like that, which was really lovely. It's also quite scary from the recording aspect of it, because you want to make it authentic, but you also don't want to hit a bad note. And and that's not always, that's just part of the humility, isn't it, of a live recording, as sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But to be able to just step into that freedom and enjoy it, regardless of the perfectionism, for anyone who's a perfectionist like me, it was just really beautiful, really.
So we released this week the song All Our Voices, which is one of the, well, actually released the whole thing, but we just put out a video on social media yesterday of All Our Voices. And this is this one song which has really just has one real line in it and then some melody that you can fit other words around. So that we have these kind of opening words, but it is designed for people to make contributions from the floor and then literally all our voices join in with it. And I'd love to hear from you, Derek, because obviously you weren't there, but you've heard us talk about this sort of thing before. I just like your reflections, I guess, both on what you saw and heard, but also on the concept and how you could imagine that applied in your context.
Yeah, I mean, it was posted on what, Monday? Was it Monday or Tuesday?
Just yesterday, I see.
It was yesterday. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow. A lot happened since yesterday. I was texting with Peter Assad about it. Peter, of course, features prominently in the the picture and the recording. It's one of those moments that you can tell, and I've experienced this at various retreats and songwriting camps and whatnot, but you have this really amazing experience of worship, and it's intimate with the Lord and it's intimate with each other, so yeah, both vertically and horizontally. And then you kind of walk away with that trying to explain that to people. And there's this like, it's a little bit of a meta narrative, right? Of how worship with the Lord always is, that like we have these transcendent experiences And then we're left with the task of trying to explain that to people, mm-hmm. And make the intangible somehow tangible and receivable. And so, like, I see this amazing recording and this amazing thing going on, and it's a great song. The words just hit as they're being called out and as they're being sung, and I know that it's only a glimpse of what it was actually like to be in the room. And so, yeah. So I guess in that is like a word of encouragement for anybody who experienced that as like that was real and. It does come through on the recording and it will never match up to your memory of the experience, but that's okay. And that's sort of our task as Christians in the Great Commission.
What we most wanted to get across was not really the songs. It was the model, the idea of the lights are on and the PA switched off and the voices can handle it. You know, we had a guitar and a piano in there. But actually, the voices, I mean, you'll see in one of the next videos that comes, the voices completely take over. That's how it is. But that eyes can be open, smiles can be on faces, there's laughter, there's nervousness, there's various different things that happen, particularly when you do this thing where you say, right, who's got a contribution? Because at that point, the whole thing can kind of stands or falls. But then you kind of, my recollection of it is the kind of the rising sense of community, the rising sense of confidence, the rising sense of joy, the rising sense of compassion and empathy and all the other things, because you start getting on, piggybacking on the things that people are saying and making those words your own. But I think we thought for this, it really doesn't, in a sense, it doesn't matter how polished it sounds or even how polished it looks, just that you can see it as well as hear it, so that you could say, why isn't my, you know, I'd like a bit of that in my church. We don't want like anybody to kind of impose or create a dominant model. But I think certainly in the context in which I circulate in, and maybe some of the rest of us as well, it's actually quite hard to do that stuff without slightly deconstructing the model and saying, right, we're actually going to do something different here. We're going to turn the microphones down. Whatever it, you know, we might move out of the pews. We might turn to face each other. And how would you hear someone if they called something out? So there's a whole lot of stuff there. And we offer it sort of as a, hey guys, how about doing stuff like this? And then what we hope to do next year is pull together some other community songs. And I think those other ones might be a little bit more along the lines of describing community and exploring the ideas of it. But now we've got it in our heads that you can do call and response and interaction and make it up as you go. I think we'll find that hard to resist with some of them, because it's become a little bit of a calling card, hasn't it? Mm. Anyone got any final remarks?
There's just something so beautiful about, you know, what you're just describing about, like, that building excitement as people are shouting out things and everyone's like, yes, let's sing that. Like, there's this real embodiment of singing for each other. Taking each other's songs and each other's prayers and saying, I'm going to bring this to the throne with you. Like, you need to pray that and I need to pray that, and let's do that together. And it's a really, really strong embodiment of that.
Yeah. The thing that struck me is how much bravery and boldness in front of the Lord and in front of your body, the body of your fellow believers, that it takes to actually like receive the word from the Lord and then open your mouth and say that, risking looking foolish or saying the wrong thing or picking something with a difficult number of syllables. And it also takes bravery and boldness to live in community. So I think it's another like reflection of that.
We did have that, and I won't go on for ages about this, but Derek, you said to say something in different number of syllables, and like I think again that's where we're called, as for those of us who are worship leaders, it's like a way for us to love the body as well. Like, you know, we all come with our giftings and we come with what we have, and so when to have someone say something that maybe was meant to be five syllables but then is nine, and then you as the worship leader go, okay, we're going to do this, let's say this, and you interrupt the whole performance of it, but what you're doing is you're honoring the voice and welcoming it. And I think I get really sad when I'm in church contexts that they say, can we turn the music up really loud so no one can hear themselves singing, because they get embarrassed.
It doesn't work with Andrew and Derek.
But like, I get really sad with that because I'm not quite sure what the issue there is. Mm. I'm not sure if that's a lack of sign of love from the community, that someone would be embarrassed to open their mouth to sing, or if it's a cultural thing. And so these songs are actually a really lovely opportunity to say, you contribute and we will sing back with you. Mm. It's a beautiful thing. Mm. And so I enjoy that.
Yeah, the thing that's profound is that it's a communal experience. Like, the people are more important than the songs, which is a refrain we keep coming back to, but that's what it feels like there. And I think in a lot of contemporary worship settings, there is sort of a sense that the production of the song, the people are there to sort of serve the production of the song. Mm. And these songs, like, we stumbled on this, it wasn't an agenda that we set, but these songs do the opposite of that. The song is very humble, like, it's very simple. There's nothing intrinsically incredible about the song, you know. I back them. Particularly these ones that have been carried around. We've grabbed a hold of something, but it isn't about the song actually. And in fact, the song just as a composition isn't impressive. Like, it's not something that anyone's going to sit there and go, "Whoa, I can't believe you came up with that." But the experience of singing it together in the room, like, puts it. It is an experience of community in a way that is absolutely profound. And something that has got a bit lost in the last couple of decades in terms of contemporary worship, I think.
Yeah. The thing that was just going through my head was, it's a quite, when you have the lights down and the PA switched off and there's no synth pad, how do you know the Holy Spirit's there? And
In faith,
exactly. Faith. But I was thinking, it's quite earthy, isn't it? It's quite, and you could say, isn't this all a bit kind of making it all about us? But then I was just thinking, isn't that what the Holy Spirit does in the New Testament? Takes our tiny prayers that we can barely utter and amplifies them before God into these groans and noises and sounds and whatever it might be. It feels like that is a kind of a Holy Spirit thing to do.
Yeah.
And it would be a Holy Spirit thing to do amongst the body, which is where really, you know, it's where Paul describes the work of the Holy Spirit is happening, amongst the body in its diversity. And variety. I was going to move on, but let's just think, what advice would you have? Because I've said, you know, we might need to rethink the model a little bit. Okay, this is going to be difficult. So if somebody who has listened to the album, the EP, seen the songs, been part of it, or even just listened to this, thinks, yeah, I'd like to do that, but how am I going to do that in my church? Have you got any thoughts? You know, how would you do it? How would you make a space for it?
Writing or... Yeah. Are we talking about
how Chris, I keep jumping in on you.
No. Same. Are we talking about how would we write songs?
No. How would you actually create that context in a, you know, in your church of however many with whatever? So I guess I particularly, you know, if you're in a church that basically sits in a circle and everyone picks a song and just starts to sing it, then you're probably going to find this quite intuitive. But my experience is that most churches aren't doing that. So how do you translate that to a gathering on a Sunday morning? Or should we not bother with that? Should we just say, well, let's just do this sort of thing elsewhere?
I like to seed stuff like this in special worship nights. Mm-hmm. That's actually kind of what I'm doing through my psalm series. Last year I ran a series of events called the Worship Lab, where I just created laboratory experiences for people to experiment in. We did things like psalm singing and art shares, that sort of environment lowers the walls between people and allows them to actually, you know, make eye contact with one another, make small talk. We've got three services on a Sunday morning, so a lot of them don't even really know each other, and so that's a great way to find commonality and build that camaraderie.
Yeah, I think I found these it's a lot easier to lead in small contexts and in outside of contexts where the expectations are already set, that there's a kind of musical genre that, you know, like I've led these songs over a microphone and things, but actually it's definitely less effective in that context because it too obviously is going against the grain of what everybody's expectations are. And, you know, when somebody's got a microphone at the front and everybody else is sitting facing them, you have set up a sort of a physical space that is less conducive to communal experience, if I can say that in slightly a strong way. Mm. So contexts like worship team meetings, small group meetings, prayer meetings, all of these kind of things where there is just more of an assumption that A, nobody's going to have a microphone, and B, we're in a circle and it's, you know, there's a kind of mutuality and everybody is participating in leading that meeting. Those are great contexts and much easier than sort of formal gathered worship to introduce if your congregation is totally unfamiliar with this kind of practice.
Yeah, and then once they've had a bit of practice in a smaller setting, more intimate setting, when you pull it out on a Sunday, or if you pull it out on a Sunday, then there's going to be a sort of a critical mass of people who are like, oh, I know what's going on here.
Yeah.
You know.
But actually, you know, most gatherings of the church are small. You know, many, many churches are small enough that, honestly, do they really need a PA?
Yeah.
And even in a big church, you know, I'm in sort of medium to big church, depending on which continent your frame of reference is. You know, most of the gatherings that I have with our church people are small inherently. You know, most gatherings are not Sunday morning with lots of hundreds.
Yeah. And it seems a shame in those contexts to try and pretend it's Sunday morning by singing the same songs in the same way.
Yes.
Why not
exactly.
Just really embrace what is wonderful about this smaller context?
Yeah, that's right. Mm.
I think one thing I've been thinking a little bit about, if we do any, we sometimes travel around to churches and take the Resound songs, and if we do any more tours or concerts and things, that I'd like to have a community songs bit in, probably in the middle of it. And I imagine at that point what we do is we'd all unplug our instruments and we go and walk and stand right in amongst everyone, because that breaks the expectation, doesn't it? Firstly, no one's got a microphone. Secondly, you are actually close enough to the people they could hear you. And thirdly, everyone will turn to face, you know, you could achieve a whole bunch of things by doing that. I suppose it takes a little bit of bravery, doesn't it? I would probably say, you know, get permission, like get buy-in from a church pastor as well, and say, look, I think this will really encourage us as a community. I'm not saying we have to do it every week, but please let me have a go. And if I do it, please, will you join in?
I think that's a big thing. Like having something with an end date can help build a bit of trust with people who are running a service. And so, like, I remember when we were doing psalm singing, we said, it's just for Lent. Yeah. Just for Lent. That's what we want to do. And we'll see how it goes, or just for Advent. And then when you're bringing it, especially if it's a call and response or if it's a fill in the blank, I think those kind of songs, have your plants in the congregation. Take a cue from theater and comedy. Like, have a plant, one or two, so that there isn't this really awkward pause where people who are struggling will go, oh, this doesn't work, it doesn't work. Well, we know it does work, but courage is required. And so have a couple people who will be courageous to offer first, and then see if that courage builds within those who weren't expecting it. And then if you have two or three plants and no one else says anything, great. You got two or three versions.
Yeah.
So that's maybe a way to bring it to when you get there.
Try and build in the expectation. I'd like to do it, but then I'd like to do it again next week or in 2 weeks, because I think people will have come away thinking, oh, I really wish I'd said something. I wanted to join in, but I didn't dare. But now I've seen it. We get this, don't we? With the on the songwriting retreat, people often say, oh, I don't want to share a song on the final evening. And then when they're there in the room, they're like, I want to share a song. So I always say to people, bring something quietly, sneakily, even if you don't intend to use it. Just in case.
I think a thing that hopefully would reassure any church leaders or whatever is, this is really nothing new. You know, in some ways, what we're advocating for here is where, certainly in the UK, contemporary worship, charismatic worship started like this, really simple choruses led from the floor, lots of repetitions, lots of people, you know, praying extemporary prayers and that kind of stuff. And it's really like that's the DNA of it, or that's the heritage of it. You know, it's just simplifying the formal song part of it and allowing therefore lots of space for all the other aspects of gathered worship to come to the fore.
And nobody's saying this model will be all sufficient. It won't. It has its shortcomings.
Yeah. You need, but it was something good that the church had and it's kind of lost.
Right.
And so we're sort of offering it back.
Derek, you And then we're going to have a little break. We're going to have a mid-podcast break because we've had a full-on little session here.
Great. Yeah, no, I'll say to piggyback on what Chris is saying, that should be an encouragement to people from higher church liturgical traditions too, because if the word liturgias means the work of the people, this strange sort of like, one of the things that the Reformation was really combating was something called sacerdotalism, where the sacerdos, the priest, was doing all of the work at the altar and the people weren't doing anything. And this interesting sort of sacerdotalism has crept back into our worship lives, where the worship leader on the mic is doing all of the work. And so what this is doing is it's putting the work of the worship, the work of the liturgy back into the congregation in a really clever way.
Yes. Come on. Write that in your essays, Andrew.
I literally am.
I want a t-shirt that says that. I am not a sacerdotalist.
I'm anti-sacerdotalitarianism, something like that. All right, let's have a break and we'll be back. In last month, we had the Boundless Challenge. We piggybacked on the idea from LICC, who were working with Integrity to write songs that connect, that basically songs we sing in the sanctuary that connect strongly with life outside the sanctuary. It was a kind of fascinating month. Elise's computer is about to run out of batteries. So, Elise.
And you have to save your file too.
Oh, yeah. Normally, audio things are just writing, aren't they? So let's hope so. Elise, if you're wondering why I'm talking to Elise, because she lost her audio and we haven't heard anything from her, this is why. Elise, tell us about a song from your team.
Oh, man. Well, there are so many lovely songs, particularly like No Limit to Your Love by John Grummet. The one I wanted to mention was Sharon Mercer's He Calls Us to Love, and it's going to be for kind of a weird reason. Number one, I loved it. It mentions very like contemporary things like Reddit, and there's a couple lingo that might be more familiar to American ears and metaphors than maybe other contexts. But when I was listening to it, I genuinely started hearing MXPX and the Supertones and other ska punk bands in my head. And that made me really happy because I felt like I was back to being 14. She doesn't do it at all like that, but that's just the sound I started hearing.
Welcome to Elise's head.
Yeah.
Should we have a listen?
God formed us out of dust and we're looking pretty dusty. Faith is dead without good works, we're getting kind of rusty. At home, at work, and at schools, our life should be reflecting the love of Jesus Christ, but instead we're just deflecting. We don't have to agree to just be kind. Online, at the store, and across the aisle,
Hold fast to our convictions, faster still to love. He calls us to love. He calls us to love. In a coffee shop, we pay it forward, but online, we pay it back. Headed down another Reddit trail, but we can't find our way back. We're living in a vibe of outrage.
Dun 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 dun.
You can hear it, can't you?
Nice.
In the UK, our biggest ska reference is Madness. And I could you hear? No.
Oh, I'm the only other UK person here. Yeah,
yeah. Thanks, Sharon. Right, Elise, you stick with us for as long as you can and make a lot of noises. What else have we got? Derek, tell us what team you're from and what have you got
for
us?
Yeah, I'm from Wensleydale, co-led with my good friend Travis Ham. We've got this lovely song from Andy Langton, Beyond These Walls. And this is a great reason to post more than one version of your song. The first version of the song is this great, you know, kind of jangly guitar-driven song. But thanks to some commentary from Travis and from Joel and from Jonathan and Jane and Terry and Rebecca, version two, it kind of calms down and takes a step back. Andy moves to piano. And it has this great effect, which is most clearly illustrated in the last line of the chorus. We serve in love and victory. In version one, it's like very like, yeah, victory. But in version two, the great thing that happens is the victory is augmented through love, put through the lens of love. And it really, even Andy's voice in this recording is stronger. There's a deep kind of strength in the recording that I just love. And I think that's the Lord working through this. So.
Beyond these walls, we hear your call to live by faith, give you our all. The word of life will be our guide. Your spirit's strength in us abide. Lord, send us out with hearts made new. Our hope secure, our vision true, till faith is crowned and Christ we see. We serve in love and victory. We serve in love and victory. Fear. Your living truth is ever near. You got the gift we can't contain. The cross, our glory and our gain. Lord, send us out with hearts made new. Our hope secure, our vision true.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a fan. Yeah, you got the gift we can't contain, the cross, our glory and our gain. It's like a great classic hymn line, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
But I agree,
yeah.
Really evocative. Yeah. There's more kind of pathos in it, isn't it? The way he's done it this time.
Yeah.
It?
And gravitas.
Yeah.
Which is just great.
Yeah. Great job, Andy. Oh, let's keep going.
Yeah.
Andrew, what do you got?
Yeah, so from Team Yorkshire, which I'm co-captain with Rebecca Beast. A lot of good stuff this month. A couple of shout-outs, Dave Acaster, Outside These Walls, and Karen Stromberg with It Will Be All Right, I think is, yep. Mm-hmm. That one really developed over using the community to develop through the online Unite Adoration retreat. And but I'd like to point out You Are Boundless by Stephen Sloss. I really like Yeah. I mean, it's a great arrangement. That's really cool as well. But I really like how he's taken this idea of the boundless nature of God, the kind of transcendence of God, and then he uses that as like this way of framing that we have to be boundless and go out into the world in the same way that God is everywhere and above everything. You know, we can take that message beyond Sundays into the world.
To the Lord, as dark gives way to light, O Spirit, come. As we make our way each day, be it work or rest or play, do good and make things right, yes, Spirit, come. In every moment, every place, let us dwell within your grace. You are boundless, you are timeless, never ending. Timeless, never ending, beyond all time and space. In the market, at the pub, let us radiate your love. Sing good news day and night, now Spirit come. With our neighbors and our friends, seek a joy that never ends. Let socials go worldwide, hey Spirit come.
Was I the only person that was listening to that jig and thinking it actually sounded a bit like a kind of Bollywood tune? And I think it would really work. They didn't once he started singing, but in the instrumental bit before, I don't know whether he's ever gone down that route. And he's an Irishman.
I don't know if anybody's gone down that route in 12 song yet.
No.
It could be a meta challenge.
Yeah. There you go.
Yes.
Right.
God is not confined to the sanctuary. You do not live in temples built by human hands. So the scriptures.
Yeah.
This is great. Chris, have you got a song?
Yes.
Nice.
I do. From Team Care Philly. This is a newcomer to the 12 Song Challenge, Seth Zimmerman. And he has written a song called The Maker's Craft Coffee. And it's just an incredible exploration of his daily ritual of roasting his own coffee. And it's just really profound, really beautiful lyrics, just a profound kind of use of a moment in his daily life to meditate on God.
Oh, on terrace slopes the branches bend, the ripened rubies catch the sun. Oh, the gatherer's hands reach out to them, the harvest has now begun. Berry placed as daylight fades, the baskets coalesce as one. Harvest well done. Your love is patient, so we trust and we wait. Your plan is perfect, it's where we percolate. Skin stripped away, the inner seed now revealed. Bow waters washed of faithful streams with thorough cleansing, they've been sealed. Beneath the sun's unbroken.
There's a song that is surely full of lines never before used in Christian music.
Indeed, yeah, which is a general observation about the challenge, actually. Is, you know, sometimes we talk about how difficult it is to kind of branch out of the familiar language in every worship song of every kind, in every theme, in every genre.
Yeah.
But this challenge, my goodness, people have written things like Reddit and, you know, the pub and stuff like that, which just, you know, and, you know, in this challenge, there's humor, there's like a kind of a witty but a profound metaphor here. And, you know, I found that aspect of the whole challenge really interesting.
Mm. I think when we were setting this challenge, I think Sam commented on how at the previous event that he and I had been at, one of the things Andy Flanagan, who was steering it, had said is don't edit, just write the weird stuff. And sort of, in a way, it goes against the idea of trying to focus the things in towards the congregation. But actually, sometimes you've got to let yourself write the weird stuff to try and find the gold, haven't you? And so I've enjoyed that. I've actually been through every song so far this month, which turns out it's not that hard if you just kind of start at the beginning of the month. and that's one of the things I've really enjoyed is when I found someone who's kind of said, look, I don't know where this is going, but I'm going with it. And that's been really exciting to be part of. This is great, thank you. We will have a little montage at the end of this little bit of some remaining songs from the other teams. It's great to hear what people are doing. We will give the star of the month to Heidi Cather, who has been one step ahead of me through the whole month. Everywhere I've gone, Heidi's already commented, and most of the time already said the thing I would think of, and so I've said, trying to think of something else that sounds clever. So, star of the month, woohoo!
Star of the month.
At least you're still here. Have you? Has the Lord blessed you with?
It's the multiplication of battery power, of lithium.
Well, I've decided to draw on our theme with community songs, that if the audio is different or not the best quality, it still might be good because we're in community.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, we'll take that. Oh, so great. Great to have you still here.
You don't have to keep that in the podcast. I've been running mad around my house trying to figure out how to sort it. So hopefully I found a reasonable solution.
Any other sort of general observations of the month from anybody? I have one. Can I give you my observation? I think one thing I did notice was just how often when people described life outside the sanctuary, it was in fairly negative terms. And I was sort of struck by that. And obviously for any individual, of course, life outside the sanctuary might be a thoroughly negative experience, and that would make a lot of sense. But it was quite notable that across the whole group, a lot of the time we talked about the darkness and the lies and the doubt and the blah, and I think probably, I'd love to hear your reflections on this. I probably had hoped that a few more people might dig a bit more into, oh, God is at work in all this, this is God stuff in the ordinary thing. So we got a few that kind of dug into that. But did anyone else pick up that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it reminded me when we sat down together to start working on doxicology, you know, we all wrote very similar theological treatise, kind of first draft hymns, trying to engage with that theme and figure out what on earth we had to say. So I noticed the same thing, Joel, and I wonder whether something similar is going on here, that because it's an unfamiliar theme, it's not what most of us write about all the time, that's everybody's first kind of the first, because when you think, what's going on in the world? Oh, dear. Yeah. it's in a lot of mess. So I wonder if that's just everybody's first song. And so if we ran this challenge again, I wonder it would be fascinating to discover whether a quite different crop of songs emerged.
Here is the montage rundown of other songs that you should definitely go and check out. And because it's a very fascinating boundless month, I'm going to give a brief description for most of them. So the first is Rachel Dunn from Team Eccles with the song This Is The World, where Rachel basically describes a week of pastoral encounters in her work. From Team Dundee, we've got Trevor Thorne, Come Celebrate the Harvest of Energy, with a hymn, Seeing God at Work in Renewable Energy. From Team Pontefract, we've got Grace and Peter Assard with Come To Me, which is using Psalm 27 to respond to reports of immigration enforcement raids. From Team Cumberland, we've got Carl Gladstone. These are the ships that will carry us through. And Carl is just reflecting on how a tragic death in the community brought all the people's grief into the church. From Team Kendall, we've got Ian Sparks, Lord, You're With Me on a Monday. It is a clergyman's lament, because the clergyman also has a life and plenty of work outside the sanctuary. And then finally, from Team Stilton, John Stammers with Gooda Me, which is a Welsh language song, seeing Christ with us in all kinds of situations. Enjoy.
This week I've met a woman, life not what she'd have chosen. Still she rises, still she gives, finding ways each day to live. a hurting heart, still spreading grace. This is the world that God has made.
Come celebrate the harvest of energy from wind, produced by lofty turbines, both elegant and kind. To land or sea beneath them, as they embrace fresh air, give thanks for God's great gifting of power to wisely share. All the
And are you afraid?
Down, children lost, life askew, doors broken in by a merciless few. Here are the ships that will carry us through. Oh, here are the ships that will carry us through.
Lord, you're with me on a Monday when I've got the blues. Lord, you're with me on a Tuesday. Beth bynnag na fi, rwy ti gyda mi. Hyd llwybrau harf ti'n arwain fi. A thrwy y dyffryn tywyll di. Ar glwydd fy migael, ti'n fy arwain i.
Challenge. The challenge for November is December songs. We're going back to a challenge that we did a couple of years ago. Here's the reason for this. One is we are never short of services needing songs in December. They come around every year, and most of us who are in any kind of music ministry think, oh, what am I going to sing this year? And B, it just felt unfair to make any church musician to think about anything other than what they're going to do in their December services during November. And then finally, why do we call them December songs? Because if we're really honest, most churches can't quite decide whether they're in Advent or December or Christmas, or and kind of merge the two somehow. And it just somehow feels easier to say, whatever it is you sing in December, that's good with us. So I wanted to get a bit of thoughts from some of you guys. We did December songs a couple of years ago. We even did a little EP of those. What can you say? Are there any kind of particular? Well, no, tell me about your experience of Advent versus Christmas in December.
Well, we run our carol services during student term time, and so we are firmly. Sometimes I'm leading. I was leading carol services on, you know, the first Sunday of December. So yeah, firmly no Advent.
Right.
No Adventists.
Firmly Advent free.
I think there can be a differentiation between carol services and Sunday services. I think that's what our church this year is trying to do. Like, Sunday services in December are leaning Advent, but then the carol services are the carol services. But we also, in my other context, Christmas went beyond December. Haven't quite experienced that here. So that's just different.
I'm a stalwart Advent stan.
Are you?
I love the liturgical calendar. I love the lectionary. It makes my job much easier. And I Gosh, I don't even let my kids listen to Christmas music.
So that no Mariah Carey until the 25th. Is that the
no? That we can listen to Christmas music on the way home from grandma's house on Thanksgiving, which for those in the UK, that's the last Thursday of November. So I will allow that. However, my church, if you didn't know anything about Christianity coming in, you probably wouldn't know anything about Christmas until December 24th. But I do make some allowances. We do have a carol service on some years that as Elise was suggesting, you know, we step out of the Kairos of the liturgical calendar into the Chronos of the secular calendar, as it were.
So many big words.
Great, isn't he? We've got to get Derek back.
Yeah, definitely. I'll bring a notebook next time.
I really like the tangible physical traditions of Advent as well. I know I'm cutting off Fendon, and I'm very, very sorry, Fendon, but it's just like the Advent wreath and the Jesse tree and all these things that are like really tangible things as part of Advent. I enjoy
Andrew, you and Ozzy in Germany in an international church.
Yeah, well, it's sort of a German international church. And so we have this sort of thing of, in Germany, Advent is a sort of a time that people celebrate, but we're also fairly... If I say anti-liturgical, I don't mean that in a bad way, but the general, it's not really a liturgical church at all. And so we don't follow the calendar really. So it gets kind of mixed up a lot where our, you know, the background says it's Advent, but we'll be singing Christmas carols, but we, you know, I also, when I get the chance, I try and help people understand what Advent is about, you know. Not just the first coming, but second coming, that kind of stuff.
Derek and I have got an Advent co-write.
We do.
We do.
We do. Yeah.
Which is attributed to Derek Bemley on it turns out we just discovered this week.
It's true. Until Chris fixes it.
I'll fix it. I'm sorry.
He won't fix it before the 24th of December, though. Yeah.
Is this like when biblical characters, their names change?
Oh, yeah. Maybe this is a sign.
Once you accept it, it becomes a new meaning. So it seems to me that in December, our churches, I suppose perhaps especially liturgical churches, have an awful lot of services. There's, you know, there seems to there are special services, this, that, and the other. There are guests, services very much oriented towards guests. There are services oriented towards us. There's a huge broad themes of that kind of Advent, which stretches right into eternity. There's the profound, huge cosmic themes of incarnation and Christmas and so on. So there are so many opportunities to actually introduce songs. And it's one of those unique times of year when... certainly the churches I've been involved in where people really would like some performance songs slightly more often than they might in other contexts. But it's also a unique time of year where loads of people who don't normally come to church turn up. And it's a time when you think, I want to sing Christmas with my church, but I want to somehow sing it so it sounds like the normal stuff we sing. Who's writing those songs? And so there are lots of opportunities. I wonder what kind of gaps, opportunities, things you see, or maybe you've even started work on some of these here.
Yeah, I think leaning into the expectation of the season, we have a tradition where on Easter at the Easter acclamation, we ring bells, and so I've connected that back to Christmas season and ringing bells for when Christ is born. And so a lot of what we do is this sort of like repressed bells sort of thing, if that makes sense, where there's this energy that we're kind of holding down. And what a great opportunity for us, because like this is such good news that we can't really hold it in. And so that sort of anticipation just builds in us. And then, like, I think also to go along with that, you know, the Advent being connected to the second coming, those apocalyptic themes are really great. And the restoration of all things. One of the psalms that pops up a couple times in the lectionary in Advent is Psalm 126. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. And so anticipating Christ's birth with that. I don't know if y'all know W.H. Auden's For the Time Being. It's a collection of poems that I'm unclear on the story, so somebody will have to fact check me on this, but I believe he wrote them for Benjamin Britten, the composer, to set as an oratorio, and they were so challenging and abstract that that Britten said, why don't you just publish them as a book of poetry? And there's such a source of inspiration for me for thematically, just getting me out of like the, he's such a, he bases it all in scripture, and it's a great way to get my brain out of the funk of the cliches, I guess, as it were. So would commend that to y'all.
So I think on the community kind of a theme, I've been thinking about what are the sort of participatory moments in our church's life around Christmas that don't have a song, and could they have a song? So like actually the Resound song that I have, Jesus is with us now, that came out of one of those kind of little challenges a few years ago where at our family carol service, we have a tradition where all the kids dress up in nativity costumes and we sort of, you know, have some kind of impromptu nativity sort of drama where everybody who's a certain character, you know, like when like all the babies are dressed up in angel costumes, and when we're doing, you know, like the readings or whatever and the angels are mentioned, then all the mums and dads hold up the babies in their angel costumes. But quite often, you know, if we'd be on like some specific part of the nativity story, then, you know, there'd be no wise men, for example, perhaps. And so the kids in wise men costumes would have no opportunity to you know, do their turn. And so I deliberately wrote that song as a way so that we could put it in every single one of our family carol services, and it names all of the characters. Yeah. and you know, it means that every, like, even if the main story doesn't focus on all of those, then we've got an opportunity to, you know, have the kids able to come up the front in their costumes and all of that kind of stuff. So I was thinking, what are the other opportunities like that? That just happens to be a tradition in our church. But one that, as I was prepping for this, that I thought, nearly every single church on their Christmas Day service has a little slot where they go around and ask the kids to show what present did you get. Yeah. I wonder if there's a song there. I wonder, because, you know, yeah, that's in some ways like that's quite a sort of secular moment. Yeah. Or, you know, it's
like a, you know, Thanksgiving song or something. Yeah.
Yeah. What if there was, you know, what if there was a song that tied together, like, what is the meaning of giving and receiving gifts, and has that participatory element where, you know, the kids get to hold up and show what they brought, or, you know, get to shout it out or something like that. So I'm brewing on that. So that's my little idea.
Nice.
But feel free to like dive in and do the same thing. And I would encourage you to have a look at your own church's traditions around Christmas, because I bet there are some that are not covered by every other church's song repertoire.
So one thing that I've been wondering about, I don't know if this is a gap, but we've had this conversation in our church about when you have a song and there's different lyrics, like for some reason, for me, if I have a whole other hymn verse, it's less jarring than say 98% of the same words in a particular hymn verse, but there's a switch, whether it's a move to inclusive language or just difference between British and American English. So I wonder if you took your typical Christmas songs, and just like certain churches will add a Calvinist verse, what if you added an Advent verse at the start of it?
Derek's going to explode. Kind of... How does that work?
But
my copyright radar is also going to explode.
If you choose one that's public domain, that the hymn tune is public domain, then you're okay. And I also, musical theater is my background, so I'm also thinking, like, what song could you write that would be sung 5 minutes before then the Christmas song was sung.
Yeah.
You know, like if God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, that actually has an Advent verse in it with the Magnificat, Gabriel and the angel and Mary. But like, what if you had that? And what could be sung in the scene before?
Mm.
I don't know.
Those are the things I was thinking about. You could also, just jumping onto that, and Chris's copyright concerns, if there is a song of yours that your church already sings regularly, then you could think, oh, I could write a bunch of Christmas words for this, and we could have it could have the same chorus or something. I don't know, but and obviously you could also do that with someone else's song, and you can fight with the copyright police. But you for your own song, I guess it would be less appropriate in a sense for you to take one that your church doesn't already know and just think, oh, I'll just write some Christmas words for that, because I mean, you could do that and it might be better. But I was thinking maybe there's something you've already got that they're already singing, and therefore that's an opportunity to just make it really easy for people to join in, but also get that kind of bing, oh, this is Christmas stuff, or this is Advent stuff, whatever it might be. Sorry, Andrew.
I was going to say, last week on Liturgy Fellowship, Bruce Benedict asked about Christmas songs which mention the Holy Spirit. And I couldn't really come up with anything. And I thought that's a great sort of gap, Trinitarian songs about the incarnation. I mean, obviously we focus a lot on Jesus at Christmas, you know, how is God working as Father, Spirit, Son in that?
I was thinking about the Sunday after Christmas. So, and this is in my experience, I really want Christmas to stop on Christmas Day. I'm like, I'm done, because I've had the whole of December. So that's it. I hand the baton over to my esteemed colleague in Minneapolis at that point. But I want it to stop. And the part of it is because I'm not really festive anymore. I know it's kind of supposed to be this long feast, but you just reach this kind of, whew, and then everyone comes to church, and there is a slightly weird feel to the Sunday after Christmas. And it's partly because a bunch of people are away and so on. But it's also, we sort of keep doing it. So I just thought, is there a way of, maybe that's the time for the more reflective, for the more serious Christmas song, or the more serious exploration of the incarnation, or things like that, which is kind of the sleigh bells have stopped, but you get a bit more time to kind of dig into something about the Christmas story in a more chilled way. That's my kind of thing. So maybe there's a song, whatever that service is like at your church, maybe there's a song for that moment.
We do a practice called the Jesse Tree in our house, where you go through the whole story leading up to the incarnation, God's story and theophany and all that stuff. And I was just wondering, maybe someone could write a song that you could have like 28 verses with that would go through each ornament. simple melody line. You could just sing around the tree.
Yep.
And again, like, it's maybe not a song for Sunday, but the church is still focus on community singing, just a slightly different context.
Yeah. I like it. 28 verses or 24 verses for your Advent calendar, or however many you have in that.
Open one a day.
One a day. One verse. Come on, who in our community is going to do this? I've got a few names in my head. I got a feeling Andrew...
Peter Assad's already done
Andrew
it.
Andrew Clayton might well do it. I could sort of imagine Mike Clifford might pull this off. Yeah, great stuff. Well, basically the challenge this month is do whatever is going to be appropriate for your church during December. We all have slightly different traditions and emphases and expectations. But we want to make a bit of space for you to just serve the stuff that is actually happening. And if it becomes one of the songs you put in your back pocket and save for another year, then that's fine. Hopefully it means we're not trying to divert your attention in several different directions and make you straddle theological themes and all the rest of it. You can just kind of stay focused to what you're doing as a church musician. Thank you very much, everybody. Elise, Derek, Andrew, Chris. It's been great to have you here. Is there news that I need to share about anything? I haven't really thought about it. Sorry, I was a bit hurried in the build-up to this, but that's all right. Let's say no, and that we'll end with a featured song. And I think we'll take one of the songs from our EP. And I think we played All Our Voices raw and unpolished a little while back. So why don't we finish with We Will Glorify, because that was fun. Just keep listening to the end, because when the voices take over, it's quite exciting. Bye.
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 Yay!